What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Welcome all of you to Upfront on the Voice of America.
And I'm Nadia Sami. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Upfront, the Voice of America's hottest show. You know how we do here. We explore our daily lives and keep it real. Of course, most importantly, we've got loads of your opinions lined up.
And some music too, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C. Now, in African education systems, one of the most important educational benchmarks for students is passing their primary and secondary leaving exams. One to go to secondary school, and the other is to go to the university. And usually, there are very few places for this, so it's very competitive and requires a lot of preparations by students. And these national exams are what is referred to as standardized tests. Each educational system has its own set of standardized testing. And it's a test that is administered and scored in a consistent or standard manner. Now, standardized tests are designed in such a way that the questions, the conditions for administering, scoring, and procedures and interpretations are basically consistent and are scored in a predetermined or standard manner. And for all of you who have gone to school or still in school somewhere on the African continent, you have or will ultimately soon have to sit for one of those tests. Speaking from personal experience and from anecdotal information that I've, you know, from people that I know, preparations take more time from a student's total learning hours in a year than any other activity. Students are known to spend sleepless nights preparing for this exam, and the pressure can take a psychological toll and many other related stresses. So on the show today, we want to look at the effectiveness of standardized testing in our schools. Do you feel the pressure to pass these exams? What happens to those who fail? Most importantly, do we sacrifice a lot of learning time to prepare to sit for these exams? Let's talk. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Throw it up, watch it all fall out. Pull it up, that's how we ball out. Throw it up, watch it all fall out.
There's this worrisome development where students mainly concentrate on passing the test instead of understanding the material. This is so because most countries are exam-oriented. So pupils or learners study for tests in order to pass the exams rather than understanding the material.
When you are writing the examination, which has been standardized at your own institution, there you stand a better chance of understanding the concepts and the tests and all those things.
The benefits of standardizing tests in primary as well as secondary education is that a lot of people are able to pass the exam. The exams are set to the extent that the school or the examiner brings all students together, and in the process, leaving nobody behind. So it ensures that almost a lot of people pass the exams.
No, I don't think so. That development cannot help the the promotion of education standards, especially in education. We have to put the standards. If each school is going to have its own curriculum, its own syllabus, how are they going to assess the progress?
All I'll say is standardizing the examination test in schools. I think it really is of benefit to the students, in a sense that the teachers, they will be able to understand the students. They are the ones who understand the students because they are the ones who teaches them. So it's more like that. It's a one-on-one situation whereby you give out the examinations according to what you have taught, rather than the system whereby the whole country, you like the same examination.
If tomorrow is judgment day,
say mommy,
and I'm standing on the front line.
Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, Jackson Vungani is in Washington, D.C. Now, on today's show, we're talking about standardized exams in our schooling systems. From primary all the way to secondary school, students spend a lot of time preparing for these exams. In best case scenarios, they study day and night for months in advance to sit for these tests, which are made up often of multiple choice and short answer questions, essay questions, of course. And for pupils, their future often rides on them. You know, if you've gone through the schooling system, that a lot of your future becomes based on how you perform in these exams. If you pass, you go into a good secondary school, university. If you fail, it could mean dropping out of school altogether, cutting short your education. As we know, it's very hard to get back into the schooling system once you drop out for a certain amount of time. So these exams are essential.
Nadia, many people have said that this overemphasis on standardized tests can lead to what is a dumbed-down curriculum. Like you said, these tests are made up of mostly multiple choice and short answer questions, which can't or don't measure higher order thinking or creativities or speaking or artistic skills. And that's just few of the many important areas that students need to gain in as part of their learning experience. And unfortunately, these areas are never tested. In many cases, are becoming less and less important part of our school curriculum. And we're hoping we'll talk about that in our coming shows also, just to get a little deeper on the importance of extracurricular activities. One of the people that has gone through this system where they had to do a national exam or a standardized test, my friend and colleague, Henok Fenty. Yeah, he did it in Ethiopia. I spoke to him about the type of pressure that students go through as they prepare for these exams. So, Henok, did you have to sit for any standardized exams when you were in school?
Oh, yes, very many of them, actually. There's one in sixth grade, another one in eighth grade, and then another one in 12th grade. And the most important one is the 12th grade, because when I took the 12th grade, they call it the ECLC, Ethiopian School Leaving Certificate Examination.
That's a very long acronym.
Yes.
ECLC.
In short, the devil.
That's what you called it? It was that bad?
Well, I mean, in retrospect, looking back, that's what it was. When I took that exam, standardized exam, there were about 75 million people in Ethiopia. And from 75 million, 7,000 people made it to colleges and universities. So you can see this and it's like, wow, very small amount of people make it.
So it's very competitive.
Yes.
And just the pronouncement of the acronym ECSLA give the kids heebie-jeebies because your future rides on that.
That is true. If you make it that day, it's not only having a track record, because throughout high school you have scores and grades. None of those count. Your performance that day determines whether you'll be someone in life or being a loser left out in the streets with no job, no education.
I'm laughing at that.
No,
it's not funny.
Respect whatsoever. And
that one moment, that one exam.
That one day.
So regardless of what you started and how well you performed in, you know, the whole year or the last 4 years, as you prepare for this one big moment to go on to the next step in life, doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
So if you're having a bad day, that's it.
And so many of my friends who were performing better than me did not make it. And, you know, if you are nerve-wracked, you're nervous, something went wrong, and somehow
you just can't deliver.
That's it. It's done. If you're sick that day, it's done. There's no second chances. Well, I mean, there is a second chance, but the second chance is you have to have all A's.
Wow.
Yes.
That's like the makeup exam.
Yes. So if you want to go to college, you have to have an average on that day, 3.4 average.
GPA.
To go to college, GPA.
Right.
If you want a second chance the next year, the one after, you have to have all A's,
Wait.
4 points.
So you have to go again the whole year, or they'll give you like
you just go
two.
Sit for the exam. You apply for it. You sit for the exam. You take it. You have to ace it.
And so because you did it a second, you're doing it the second time, they raise the standard.
They raise the bar high.
Man, so these guys don't want you to pass.
No. Well, I mean, this is the problem with not having the school infrastructures. You know, back then there were about 4 or 5 universities in the country. Just 2 years, the past 2 years, the country built 13 of them.
Oh,
so the infrastructure is coming up and it's much, much better. Last year, I took the SLC, I think, about 10 years ago. And now it's 116,000 that made it. From 7,000, 116,000
wow.
is quite significant. So,
what happened to all these young people that were part of that cutoff? You know, I mean, this 116 from 7,000, that's a large figure. So you're talking about over almost 100,000 people.
Those are your carpenters. Those are your welders. Those are your classmates.
Which is nothing wrong with
when
you
go, you
know, some of these are noble professions.
These are noble professions.
But they missed out on the chance to, you know, be lawyers or doctors and other professions that are.
And we need those. We have carpenters, we have welders who did not have secondary education in that country.
Mm.
We have a lot of rural population moving into urban areas. And these are basically farmers who didn't have primary education. So they would work in the urban areas in these disciplines. When you have someone who could have gone to be a doctor, to be an engineer, who could have actually built bigger buildings, is working in a small construction site as a daily laborer. So
that's,
I mean,
limiting them, and that's limiting the country's progress.
Exactly. And if you look at that, there are some people who restrategized, they came back and they made it. But you know how long it took them because they didn't perform well that day? Yeah. It took them average 10 to 20 years.
Wow.
To get back in the game and earn a master's degree.
Wow.
And
That is disturbing on so many levels. And so I'm hoping that now that, you know, the country has, you know, invested a lot of in education, and including building all these universities, that the attitudes are changing in the educationists themselves, in terms of changing how they administer these standardized tests, and also standardized tests in general.
Well, right now, because, you know, initially as well, throughout Africa and also in the Ethiopia that I grew up in, there weren't that many universities. So it was an access problem. So most of the younger population did not have the access. Now there is more and more of the access. And when you boost the access, then you're compromising quality. So now the challenge that the country has is, you know, when it was 7,000 students, the teachers were quality teachers. The system produced better professionals. Now they're producing in mass. They need to focus on quality, because quality of education is just going down the drain in that country. So,
and that's a whole different discussion that we'll probably have to explore right here on Upfront on the Voice of America. Thank you very much, Henok.
Thank you for having me. It's okay, as long as I got you, baby.
There's need for the school to have their own standards, but for the sake of unity, I would go for all schools in the country having one standard measure. If we allow that each school should have its own standardized measurement, then it will mean we shall have various standards in each school. As a result, it will have problems. Pupils or learners will have problems when they shift or when they move from one school to another because they have to meet a different standards altogether.
I think it's completely unfair. You can't test people's, you can't even use something like a standard exam to test people's education when everyone hasn't had standard or equal access to education. It doesn't make sense that someone such as myself, who went to one of the best public schools, and would be taking the exact same exam as someone who lives in some of the most poorest areas, testing how much we both know when obviously because of, by virtue of where I live, I've had more access to education than them.
Wow, it's just extremely hard because, you know, students, like especially those in high school, that's like to prepare for almost 3 years only for this test, and competition is extremely fierce.
Jackson, as we know, testing should be a central issue in the education reform movement around the continent. The idea seems quite sensible that holding students and teachers to certain objective standards incentivizes both of these stakeholders to work harder and to achieve their goals, right? It also seems reasonable that to use the results of those tests measures the quality of education at a school and collectively will measure the quality of education in a country. Now, however, not all schools are on the same level given their location and their resources, etc. So holding all schools to the same standards perhaps would appear to be unrealistic in some cases. It also makes students work just to pass the test. Jackson, now, the standardization of schooling is a hot topic in South Africa at the moment. As you know, just recently the World Economic Forum released a survey of 62 countries which ranked the education offered in various countries. Now, South Africa's mathematics and science education ranked at the bottom, came 62nd of 62 countries for the quality of our maths and science education. And it's something that is worrying on so many levels. You know, we've had so many, I mean, it's correct and true to say that South Africa has been plagued by education problems, education woes over the past few years. For one, many people here bemoan the fact that the level to pass has been set so low that someone who actually knows very little about the subject or very little in the work knows, for example, 30%. In South Africa, the pass grade for many subjects is 30%. So never mind the fact that you don't know 70% of the work. If you can scrape together 30%, you'll pass. And the problem is that when these students get to university level, they struggle. You know, many of our top grade 12 matriculants, people who graduated top of the class, who got great grades and results in schooling level, got to university and struggled so much because, in their own words, the schooling system hadn't prepared them well enough.
Nadia, the reason why standardized exams in many African schools are very important is that the top students get a chance to attend a good public school or university. Elite schools often choose students based on who passed with the highest grades in a standard exam. But as Oluse Segun, a young Nigerian student here in Washington, D.C., says, students from different areas can score differently because they have different access to knowledge and information. You have personal ideas about standardized testing, and you one of the very few people who have actually encapsulated it in a piece of writing, in a document. Let me know, what do you think about standardized testing in general as a concept?
I mean, I honestly believe it's nonsensical, and it's not even an accurate way to try and test what someone has learned throughout their entire education. It's kind of something I was saying earlier. It doesn't make sense that someone such as myself, who lives in one of the most affluent areas in the United States, would take the exact same examination as someone who's living in some of the poorest parts of the U.S. And we both certainly did not have the same access to education, but we're both going to be tested on the exact same information. I mean, there's no way that makes any sense.
What does it mean for you as a young student when you pass or when you fail these standardized exams? What is the implication?
The implication is it's like, why are you coming to school then? It actually makes no sense, because what you're learning in school does not truly 100% correlate with what is on these exams. However, you're expected to know all these things, and it's put on you and your teachers, and the teachers more so too, because if you fail, they fail too. And a lot of them, that's how that's how they're graded. That's how they're assessed.
There's a grading system also for the
exactly,
they,
because
they go through like an annual assessment. But you as a student, There's an opportunity for you to either make up for the test when you fail it, and also there's a choice for you. Even though you're from Nigeria, you went to school here in the USA, which is unlike in Nigeria, where you, if you failed this one exam, it probably affect you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It's probably not the same as here in the US, is it?
You know, honestly, it's not, but at the same point, not directly. It's not such a linear relationship between you failing that exam and then it affecting your entire life. But take, for example, there's an exam that students take in high school for different subject levels, be it mathematics or English. If you fail those things, you have to keep on taking it and taking it and taking it. And you can't move on until you pass that exam. So,
you're stunted in a way.
Yeah, you're stunted. It's just you're in limbo, because it's like you keep on trying to pass, and they're giving you multiple opportunities to take it. But the funny part is, the further away you get from the grade level you should have actually taken that exam, the less amount of information you actually have. So unless you're going to take time out of your personal schedule to go and study that information, you're almost at a disadvantage. No one realistically goes, kind of what Henok was saying, and studies for an entire year again. You don't do that. Hopefully you remember those things that you learned last year or 2 years ago. So what
is your recommendation in terms of replacing standardized testing?
I think, honestly, the tests, they're not just fair for just the reason that I said everyone doesn't have access to it, but you really need to just take into consideration what people have been exposed to, just their access to education. And something I was meaning to say is that your access to education, or the quality of the education you have, is dependent upon where you live. Therefore, if you don't live in a good area, you are not going to get as good quality of an education as someone who lives in a better area, but that yet you're expected to know the exact same things. People need to assess students based on what they have been able to learn.
But then you're going to the same universities. What if you're not on the same level?
This is where the problem starts. It's kind of, there's a book called A Hope in the Unseen, the boy who went from Ballou High School to Harvard University. Of course, he has had a much difficult time than the average student going to Harvard, but he still had to make up for when he got there. But he said he encountered so many different problems. It's still the same material, but it's not, because even the way you're taught to learn to think, it's completely different. I mean, you live in a system where I feel like where the areas that don't have as much access to education, where you're not thought to critically think, because also in your neighborhood, being intelligent or critically thinking can get you killed. Whereas from where I'm from, I've been taught to question authority since I was a child. But for someone such as the man who was in the book, Hope in the Unseen, that has never been he's never had to do that. It's just you learn, you regurgitate. And that's honestly one of the problems. But I think they need to make different tests that honestly correlate with what somebody has learned, instead of assuming they should have learned this. Because let's be honest here, a lot of these different things, like people's access to education, racism is institutionalized. It's a form of racism in itself. And it's just not fair that this person should be penalized for that. And a lot of times, who lives in poorer areas? Minority students. And that's why we have things such as, I'm blanking on it right now, that it helps minorities get into college.
Oh, yes.
Affirmative action.
Yes.
And someone will say it's not fair, but isn't it fair that you have all these things, you have Mac in your school, you have all these books in one class, someone could have been using the same
you
book
have for better almost... resources generally.
Exactly.
And you mentioned something real quick, and it's about learning something and then regurgitating it, because then you're learning to pass the exam essentially.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest problems I've seen just on my own, even working with children and seeing the way they learn. A lot of times, the kind of critical skills that are assessed on these exams, you're not really learning them until maybe late middle school, high school. So your brain has not really had time to process. And to be honest, those are the critical times, those ages in your life when you're actually learning the most things. But and now you're magically expected to cram everything and then take the exam. Even like, for example, there's something called the high school assessment. And in ninth grade, you take the Algebra 1 assessment, or when you're in eighth grade. So that's end of primary one or beginning of secondary school. It doesn't make sense that I literally just learned this information. My brain hasn't been given time to even process it. And now you're going to test me on that exact same information. And people learn at different rates. I mean, there are some people, especially mathematics, it's whether you get it or you don't get it. And some people it genuinely takes their brain a long time to assess the information.
Right,
so
right.
You're at an advantage on because your brain is working faster than mine. It makes absolutely no sense. You're not actually really taught to learn. It's just, I'm going to learn this for the time being so I can pass and move on.
Now greetings to the world. The cumulative intelligence of mankind is what makes us special amongst all other species. Everything is built upon the foundation before it. These ancient thoughts, this ancient love, these ancient hearts, these ancient souls, these ancient songs, these ancient people. These ancient thoughts, this ancient love, ancient hearts, these ancient souls, these ancient hopes, these ancient people.
Nadia, and on that note, I want to thank all our listeners and all our contributors to the show today. We'll catch you again next week right here on The Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com. Until next time, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye.